Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine, the PaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Welcome back to the Paleo View, everybody. We have an exciting show for you this week. Sarah, are you there?
I'm here, and I have bells on.
Excellent.
Okay, I don't actually have bells on, but I have figurative bells on.
So I just want to apologize in advance to everyone that we appear to be having some technical difficulties on the recording side, because although it's not actually a snowpocalypse here, there is like a nebulous blizzard that's supposedly happening. So maybe that's affecting our recording right now. But please bear with us with the sound on this show. We also have joining with us this week, Summer Inanen. Welcome, Summer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am going to try really hard to be super nice, hug everybody from afar, and affect a Canadian accent for this show.
That's excellent.
Because I've met Canada, and
you
that's
have?
What they are.
It's true. It's true.
My 6 hours in Canada makes me an expert.
6 hours in Toronto, and now you know that we are a friendly, polite nation.
That always says sorry.
Oh my gosh. That is the lesson that Sarah taught me in customs. Have you heard this story, Summer?
No.
Sarah, you need to tell this story.
When I was explaining to you the difference between excuse me and sorry?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Stacey was like totally flabbergasted. So, so the difference is like if you are in a crowded area and you bump into someone in America, you say, excuse me. But in Canada, you say, sorry. So in Canada, you would use the word excuse me if you're trying to get someone's attention. Like, excuse me, do you have the time? Right. Mm-hmm. But if you were like, to bump into somebody, if you were in somebody's space, if you were like trying to navigate a crowd, you'd say, sorry.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
And this just totally
but I'm not sorry.
Blew Stacey's mind because she's not sorry. And I'm like, you are all up in somebody's personal space. Like, you should apologize for that. That is the Canadian way. You were in Canada. And it's like a completely different, but, and that's, I mean, we just, it's one of those cultural differences. But so we ended up having like a 20-minute conversation about when it was appropriate to apologize.
I didn't get it right either.
I have to, Stacey, you're actually kind of right. I mean, we shouldn't be apologizing for that because it's not like we did it on purpose. It's not like we did something intentionally to hurt somebody. But
I tell my kids, life lesson for my kids is even if you didn't mean to hurt your sister, you still need to apologize. Like, even if it's an accident.
Well, I think where I was coming from is that it seemed the way you were explaining it is even from a preemptive perspective, like you were trying to get through the crowd. Instead of saying, excuse me, you would say, sorry, like it's coming that I'm going to disturb you.
Yes.
And that I am not sorry for. Like, those people need to get out of my way.
All right. So, cultural difference.
So, clearly, I'm an American.
Right. Yes.
I'm going to try really hard to be nice this episode because Summer's here and I'm outnumbered.
Yes.
So,
we're going to pronounce avocado correctly now.
Excellent.
We're going to talk about avocado and cilantro.
We're going to talk about all those things. Yes. So, Summer, I met you at PaleoFX last year. And
You were so freaking adorable in your little, like, deadlift and squat gear at our Eva T workshop. And you knew who I was, and me being the complete doofus that I am, didn't know who you were, and I had a blast lifting with you. And you have been one of my girl crush friends ever since. And I love what you're doing and the message that you're sharing with the community. So I'm excited to have you on today. Welcome to the Paleo View.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was an honor to meet you. I was kind of like, I know who she is. Am I going to introduce myself? And I'm so glad I did, because I always wanted to, get to know you better and have you on my podcast too.
I felt like such a doofus because Melissa Jewelwan was also in our group, and Mel was like, "Hey, Summer." And I was like, "Oh gosh, I am the jerk right now. I have no idea."
No, I stalk people. I'm an introvert, right? I stalk people from afar, and then I'll leave comments and become friends with them. And it just takes me a little longer to kind of open up and meet people, I guess.
Well, I never noticed that, Summer.
Yeah, it's weird.
Canadian. Yeah. Yes. Let's hug.
I know. It's like,
go out for dinner.
When you give me permission, when you're like, "Hey," then I'm like, I'm a total extrovert. It's just like, it's that initial barrier that I sort of,
so I tend just to like. Stacey made you an introvert and I made you an extrovert.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm not sorry.
I've been getting that a lot lately. I'm a little bit like, I need to do some investigation because I evidently have that effect on more than just you, Summer. So evidently if I want more people in my life, I need to learn how to be more welcoming. I'm not quite sure.
That's not true at all.
Anyway, so what I think is awesome about what you're doing for this community is that you are passionate about some of the things that Sarah and I talk about on the podcast, and I recently blogged about, and I feel like the community really needs to hear. And I feel like we are a community of people who have come from the perspective of a lot of us health transformations, whether that be some sort of physical journey and improvement or just kind of health improvements. And a lot of us kind of don't work on the mindset part of it as well. And so I think that it's really great that today we're going to talk a little bit about the mind part of, you know, loving and respecting your body, and not just the let's lose weight and feel great side that a lot of, you know, the main kind of paleo focus is. And there's such a small group of us that are advocating it vocally, but I know that the community as a whole feels this way. So I really appreciate your voice and commitment to that. And I want to refer people to your website if they don't know who you are, summerinnen.com. That's INNANEN. And of course, we'll have links in the show notes. But Summer has a really cool, what she calls 21-step body image remix program that if you're, you know, interested in some of the things that we're talking about today, I would highly encourage you to check out. And I'll let her kind of reveal her upcoming project maybe at the end of the show. You can give people a little insight into what you're working on next. But I think that'll be a good kind of intro for people to understand who you are and what the show will be about, to understand that, you know, we're going to have a body image, self-respect, self-love show. Sarah and I happen to love this topic. We're big fans. And, I think if you've listened to the recent podcast, you know that it's really important, Sarah, for you to focus on loving and taking care of yourself right now as you focus on healing. And so I think although this podcast is different from the last couple ones that we've done, I think it's really important for people to understand that this is an essential part of healing and getting healthy. And it has been one of the biggest things for me in the last year is to, I feel like I'm finally working on a lifelong eating disorder, you know, despite the fact that I went to camps and counselors and therapy and, you know, all that kind of stuff, I have finally found a happy place where I feel good about myself and I've determined, you know, what's important for me. And that's, you know, being healthy and being strong. And that has allowed me to kind of have a new visibility and focus that I've never had before in my life, where I no longer am plagued with like the guilt and the drama and all the kind of stuff that we'll talk about. So, I think it's really great that you're here and I'm excited. And I think it's also really great for Sarah to be reminded about this topic and how important it is right now.
I have been working very, very hard at, it's been a really big part of my life the last, especially the last couple of weeks, but just stress reduction and not just stress resilience. So not just like meditating, but actual stress reduction, taking on less, having a shorter to-do list, walking more, going to bed earlier, taking hot baths, going and getting massages. And that wraps into self-love for me, because when I'm taking care of myself in that nurturing type of way, like the goal is to reduce stress, but what it's really doing is it's really loving myself. And what is the sort of side effect of it is my self-confidence and my body image increase. Yeah. And it's a really, it's become something that, you know, what I'm trying to do now is I'm really trying to heal, and I'm feeling so many millions of miles better than I did a week ago. It is ridiculous, the difference between a week ago and now. It's just night and day. I have so much more energy. My joint pain is way lower. Like I have better mental clarity. I'm more efficient with my time. And it's like, oh, it's awesome.
Self-care goes a long way.
Yeah. And so a huge part of this is this sort of renewed commitment for me to, you know, self-care and stress reduction. And so it's now what I'm trying to figure out is like, okay, so what do I need to do to heal? And then what do I need to do to stay healthy? So where are those lines? And that's going to be a really interesting journey for me, I think, over the next few months. I'm feeling pretty darned awesome right now. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Oh, that's really good to hear.
Totally. High five.
Sweet.
Actually, I'm being Canadian. Hug.
You know what else? You know what else really helped me feel really, really good today? You don't know?
I'm waiting in anticipation.
You're waiting. I received a box, random box from Paleo Magazine. I thought, this is strange. I didn't know Paleo Magazine was going to send me anything. And I opened it up, and there were four Paleo Magazine Best of 2014 award plaques in it.
What?
Right.
That's awesome.
So I won Best Science-Centered Paleo Blog.
Congratulations. Yes, that was a biggie for you.
Huge, huge, because that's my passion.
Yeah.
The Paleo Approach won Best New Paleo Book. The Paleo Approach Cookbook won Best New Paleo Cookbook in the General Cookbook category, no less.
Yowza.
And my Eggs Benedict recipe won Best Blog Culinary Recreation Recipe.
Congratulations.
So I am super excited. And the Paleo View did come in second in the podcast category.
Nice.
So, right.
That's a move up from last year. I don't think we placed. I mean, we were nominated
last year. Yeah. So I just want to take this moment to thank everyone, because I mean, you listeners and readers and you know, fans, the people that we're connecting with, interacting with on a daily basis, you're the reason why we do all of these things. And you're the reason why these types of awards are even possible. And just thank you everyone for your continued support and connection and for voting for us. Cause that's just awesome. So thank you everybody.
Yeah, totally. That's fantastic. And thank you for everybody who voted. I'm assuming that I did not win anything, which is perfectly fine.
Well, actually,
Oh my goodness.
Best hashtag.
Yeah, I wish there was no credit to that, however.
But more vegetables than a vegetarian. The best awesome. Hashtag. And the second best hashtag was bone broth heels.
Nice. So right. I took first and second place with no credit, but that's okay.
And you guys took third place in a treat category, I think.
Excellent.
Do you want me to pull up the magazine? Double check.
It's okay. I'll get it in the mail eventually. I didn't get a fancy plaque and early release announcement, but that's okay because you're giving me the scoop.
I did squeal and I fist pumped like ridiculously many times. And then I did really dorky happy dance around my kitchen.
I've seen this maneuver. I can tell you that it actually happens just as she's describing.
Yes.
It sounds like something I would do.
I do the dorkiest random happy dances, absolutely no music, all the time.
I love it.
Well, thank you for everyone, not just for voting, but for using those hashtags. I don't know if people know this, but I started the more vegetables than a vegetarian hashtag because at some point years ago, there was like this, you know, anti-paleo, pro-vegetarian article that came out, and I publicly came out and said, you know, I used to be a vegetarian and I eat way more vegetables now. Because it was like, you know, the paleo diet's all meat. And I was like, I eat way more vegetables now than I did when I was a vegetarian. And so then I started hashtagging all of my photos where I was eating vegetables with that hashtag. And it is comical. Yes, I love hashtags. You cannot, I can't deny that. I love hashtags. I don't care how passe it is. So I love that that hashtag and that bone broth heels took off. And there's a whole bunch more hashtags that people use that I love following. And so thank you to everyone for not just voting for those hashtags, but also using them because I'm highly entertained on a regular basis. So, but while summer's here, I think we should take advantage and maybe I'll just kind of recap for people what my post a few weeks ago was about, and we can all jump in with what we're passionate about on the topic of self-love. And then I think, Sarah, you have yet another, how you managed to pull out a science on this topic is impressive. And so I'm excited to hear the science with Sarah.
The science with Sarah is going to be kind of a counterpoint to the rest of our discussions today. I thought it'd be kind of a neat way to sort of balance it. So I hope people enjoy it. but yes, please recap your post. I think if anybody missed that, they should be going and reading it.
Thanks. So I did a couple of posts the last couple of weeks, just kind of brain dumps. And one of them that's gotten the community talking was about how paleo challenges can feed disordered eating. And the other was about how self-respect is the new self-love. And that is honestly just a post that's kind of articulated a lot of the topics that we've talked about here on the podcast. It was really difficult for me to figure out what framework I wanted to share because it's harder to kind of articulate philosophies like that in word form rather than in conversation with tone and inflection and all that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, that message has been together, kind of combined, the anti-challenge and the pro self-respect, self-love has been what has enabled me to really focus on health rather than on being thin or achieving some idea of health that someone else has for me. And I equated it on a recent interview that I did with this idea that I lost over 100 pounds and have maintained a 100 pound weight loss for what is almost 5 years now. And in any other context of just that statement alone, let alone going from debilitating joint pain with numerous health conditions to a competitive athlete, like let's just focus on just the weight loss in and of itself, that if I had accomplished that feat in a vacuum and not been like a paleo leader putting myself out in front of people who I feel judged by, then I never would have doubted what I did in any sort of capacity. And it took me realizing that. I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but it took me coming to the realization that it's enough for me to have done that. And I feel good about that accomplishment. And I exceeded my goals. And I feel healthy. And I feel good. And I feel positive. And that in and of itself was really important for me to understand that, you know, I went about setting a goal, which was to have energy to play with my kids. And not only did I exceed that goal, but I changed my health. I changed the health of my family. And I have not only energy to play with my kids, but I have energy to, you know, be an athlete, which is something I never would have put those words in the same sentence before. So, you know, the post was all about those two posts were all about how did I do that? And the answer is I did it by enabling myself to respect the priorities that I had set for myself and to be okay with those being my priorities. And I realized that what wasn't part of that list of priorities wasn't fat loss anymore. Like that list of priorities was a whole lot of things, but the thing that wasn't on the list was looking good naked in the mirror. And for some people, that's really important. For me, I had achieved the goal that I set out and I feel good about myself. And so, you know, I'm having a really hard time articulating the message that I'm trying to say, except that, you know, having this concept of health and having this concept of wanting to be healthy 100% of the time and not just when I'm on some sort of challenge, which is this disordered eating concept that I've had my whole life where I'm kind of yo-yo dieting and I was using paleo challenges as another mechanism to yo-yo diet within the paleo template. And once I kind of said to myself, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to focus on health because I want to perform really good in the gym and I want to feel good all the time. And in order to do that, I need to just make the best choices that I can the most amount of times that I can. And when I don't make those choices, it's okay. And I don't need to feel guilty and I don't need to dwell on it. But the next day, I'm going to respect myself enough to have bone broth for breakfast and, you know, make better choices. And that positive mindset was a complete spin for me. And Summer, one of the things that was a catalyst for this whole process was your guest post on our blog about giving up the scale. And I still was holding on to the scale at that time. And no, granted, I still weigh myself because when I do competitions and that sort of thing, like I have to weigh in and it's not like I have no clue how much I weigh, but I hid the scale and I gave up this concept of weighing myself on a daily basis, which was happening. And I moved away from even like weekly or monthly weighing. And I just focused on, you know, how do I feel and how healthy am I and how do my clothes fit? And, you know, what do I think about myself and not like what is this inanimate object telling me to think about myself? And so thank you for inspiring me to take another step towards that self-respect and self-love that I think we're all on that journey, obviously, but I feel really good about where I am on that path right now.
Yeah. Well, wow. I'm honored that it had that much of an effect on you. And it's interesting because like you, one of the things you just said was that previously, like that 100-pound weight loss, like it almost wasn't enough for you. Like now you've kind of come to this realization that that was enough and you achieved your goals and it's amazing. And it's almost like that scale was still there telling you that that wasn't enough, you know, that that was just like this constant reminder that like that it's attached to some sort of number. And so I think that that probably really helped you to be proud of what you did achieve and to know that, well, you're enough as you are. Anyone is, you know, enough as they are, but that you didn't need like to lose extra weight to, you know, earn the approval of yourself.
Right. And I want to be clear, like, I'm not complaining if I lose fat. Like, I'm not complaining about that. But I think the idea is that, you know, as we all evaluate our own health. Certainly, it's healthier to not have excess body fat, but at the same time, for some people, they might settle into a place that is, you know, a healthy weight for them, or, you know, you plateau and you feel like you have to do things that affect your health in other ways, like Sarah and I have talked about before, like women's hormones and menstruation and that kind of stuff can be a key for that. And so I think, you know, it's important to consider what the priorities are and how you're going about achieving them during the process of this journey that you're on. And you might still want to lose weight, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the mechanism that I think people go about that, and not shaming their current self. Like you said, everybody should feel good about who they are as they are. But the message that's been really important for me is the other side of that coin, which is that just because you accept yourself and just because you love yourself doesn't mean that you can use that as justification for behavior that creates bad habits and behavior that will lead to detriments in your health, which isn't actually loving yourself. Because if you love yourself, then you respect yourself, which is kind of the message that that I had shared in those posts.
Yeah, I love differentiating between, you know, accepting where you are and loving yourself for where you are without giving yourself permission to then make unhealthy choices. And I think that, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, we really try to spread this message in the community that, you know, there's healthy, there's many shades of healthy. Healthy looks different than thin. They often, you know, overlap, but not necessarily. And that, you know, it's getting healthy to get thin rather than getting thin to get healthy and sort of switching the goals. And so, you know, giving people permission to be happy with where they are, but at the same time, not letting that be an excuse to then give up trying to progress towards better health. And I love that sort of combination of ideas.
Yeah. I think that sometimes like self-love can be perceived as complacency, which, you know, like that's not, I mean, I don't know if there's a true definition of self-love. Like I've never actually Googled self-love to see what it means. And so I think that, you know, it's like kind of basically the way that I would define it is unconditionally loving yourself. So being okay with yourself, you know, taking the negative and the positive, accepting your flaws, being okay with change because our bodies are going to change, like our weight's going to go up and down. But I think the biggest thing for me that self-love is, which I think is kind of what self-respect is really it's compassion. It's having compassion for yourself. And when you have compassion for yourself, then your choices come from a place of wanting to care for yourself and nurture yourself. And if you are compassionate, then you're going to be more driven to do things from a place of love versus fear. And that's really going to drive us to do things that are good for our health and our happiness. You know, we want to promote like, you know, just nourishing yourself. And if you are criticizing yourself, then that's going to lead you kind of down into that like sabotage cycle where you end up going from like paleo challenge to the total opposite of paleo challenge and then back to paleo challenge. So to kind of find just like this good balance where you check in with yourself on a daily basis and you're like, what do I really need right now? Like, what does my body need? How can I give it that in a kind and forgiving way? I mean, that's really compassion. And so I think that's probably what self-respect is as well. And so, yeah, I think that differentiation is important. You know, self-love isn't self-esteem. I think it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I define it as more like self-compassion and just, you know, unconditional acceptance of yourself.
I think self-love though leads to self-esteem. Like I think when you accept yourself and I mean, I think there's an aspect of this that is acceptance. And maybe that doesn't necessarily mean acceptance at the expense of wanting to continue to work towards improving something, but loving where you are at that point. And I think that leads to sort of a self-confidence and self-esteem, because I think that's the foundation of self-esteem is loving yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that sometimes with self, if you only have self-esteem and you don't have self-compassion, then you kind of have this need where to be like good at everything, and you can't accept if you're not good at something. And so like you kind of have to have a bit of both, because if you only have self-esteem, then you're going to criticize yourself when you don't live up to standards or you fail at something, you know, whereas self-compassion allows you to fail and be okay and know that you'll be there to pick yourself up and forgive yourself and move on. You know, if we have self-esteem and, you know, we think we always need to be good at stuff, then that's when like we really call upon ourselves to criticize and judge when we don't live up to those expectations, which can become really tricky when we're talking about someone's relationship with food, because that's where they're like, oh, I screwed up my whole 30. Like I'm a bad person. I'm not even going to try again. You know, like why even bother? Versus self-compassion, where you're like, oh, I'm human. This happens. There's a lot of people that do this. Like, I'm just going to, you know, start like have eggs for breakfast tomorrow and everything will be cool again. Like not, no big deal. So that's kind of the difference.
Sort of one can lead to the other, but not necessarily the other way around. So
yeah, exactly.
Stacey, are you still with us?
I am.
You're just geeking out over there.
I was just enjoying listening. Oh. So maybe while we're at a break, Sarah, you wanna just dish some science?
Let's just talk science. I'm doing like a fancy hand dance right now too.
I saw it, which is why I laughed. I was like imagining you with that song, like she blinded me with science. I like saw you dancing to that song while you said it.
That is what just happened.
Yeah, I know you too well at this point.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So, because we're talking about self-compassion and self-acceptance and self-love, I kind of wanted to talk about the counterpoint to that, which is resistance to weight loss. And I think that it's because many of us on this journey, that's the barrier we have to self-love, is this disparity between where we're at and what our goals are. And I think it can be one of the biggest frustrations for people when they have this weight loss goal. And I don't mean the last 5 or 10 pounds, although, I mean, sometimes that's definitely an issue. And especially that's where we start to talk about, you know, health weight versus vanity weight. That's where we talk about self-love. But one of the things that I think is a really big challenge that many people face is not those last 5 pounds, but the last 30 pounds or the last 50 pounds. Some people go paleo and they don't experience any weight loss, even though they have lots of weight to lose. And it's frustrating and it deteriorates our self-esteem and it makes self-love that much bigger of a challenge. And I think that it's both really important to find acceptance and find that self-compassion and find that ability to nurture ourselves wherever we are on our health journeys. But also I thought this was a good opportunity to talk about what some of the most common culprits are behind that resistance to weight loss, so that people can work on the emotional side of it, but also have a toolkit for working on the physiological side of it, so that we can, you know, work on accepting where we're at, but also then we have some things to play with so that we can continue to improve our health and continue on this health journey. So really, when it comes to resistance to weight loss, there's sort of three different categories of things that can be going wrong. So there can be something off with diet, there can be something off with lifestyle, and there can be underlying health conditions. And I'm not going to go into details with each of these because we've got some questions and we want to make sure that we have time to get to that. But just to give people sort of the first little ideas, and that will help people sort of narrow in on where they want to continue focusing on their own research. So with food, the biggest culprits behind resistance to weight loss, there's some interesting seeming contradictions in here. One is just plain eating too many calories. And I think it's sort of a common mistake that people do when they first enter the paleo diet is they're looking for easy snack foods. They're looking for, these highly palatable foods, and they end up overdoing nuts. I think nuts is the biggest culprit, or they end up overdoing bacon. Bacon is another one. I love bacon, but you can actually eat a lot of calories in bacon really, really easily. It is a calorie dense food. And then you can combine like bacon and nuts and maybe dates, and you've got a really calorie dense treat. And it's a very different thing if you're eating one or two to satisfy sweet tooth. It's another thing if you're eating 6 or 8 or 10 daily. And so I think that having some awareness of how much we're indulging in those really calorie dense foods. So dried fruit, nuts, bacon, would be to me the sort of the major culprits, the highly palatable energy dense foods that are considered paleo, and then paleo treats. So making paleo muffins, making paleo cookies. So one of the things that can happen when people go paleo is they're not actually consuming less energy than their need. They're consuming more energy than they need. So, you know, it's much more complicated than calories in and calories out, but calories are part of the equation. And so consuming too many calories means your body needs to store the excess energy. So that's one potential food contributor to resistance to weight loss. Is just, and sometimes it's hard to really be aware. You kind of need to track what you're eating for a few days and actually see what your caloric intake is, actually measure portion sizes, because maybe an ounce of nuts is a lot less than what you think it is. And then the other side of that is too few calories. So a lot of people, especially when they come from histories of diets and then they come to the paleo diet, they end up sort of subconsciously combining paleo with starvation diet approaches, and their portion sizes are really too small, or they're doing intermittent fasting and they're skipping a lot of meals. And so their caloric intake for the whole day is very low. And that sets off a whole pile of different hormonal triggers in the body, which basically lowers metabolic rate. And so then you don't need as many calories to maintain your weight, and you end up storing your excess calories, and it makes it really hard to burn stored energy. So it makes it really, really hard to lose weight. It reduces your energy levels. It's a whole pile of not very good things. And I've talked with many people who, you know, that was what was holding them back, and they actually had to eat more. And so again, just like too many calories, the best way to figure out if that applies to you is to, you know, do a food journal, try your best to not let the food journal change what you're eating. That's why food journals are such genius approaches to sticking with any kind of diet, because it alters your food choices when you know that you have to write it down and when you can see it written down in front of you. But doing what the best you can to not let it change what you eat, so you can really see an accurate picture of caloric intake. And then you can also see things like how much carbohydrates are you eating, because both too many carbohydrates and too few carbohydrates can have the same effect as too many carbs and too many calories and too few calories. So too many carbs can end up leading to insulin resistance, which can cause weight gain. Too few carbs can stimulate the same type of hormonal changes that too few calories can stimulate. So it's really stimulating sort of these starvation responses in the body, and it makes it really hard for the body to access stored energy. And then the other big diet culprit behind resistance to weight loss is food sensitivities that are undiagnosed. So there may be something in your diet that you are not reacting well, and you're actually having an immune reaction to. Weight gain can be a symptom of that, or resistance to weight loss if you're putting effort into losing weight, and nutritional deficiencies. And it's fairly easy to get tested for food sensitivities and nutritional deficiencies if you don't really know where to start. So, those are definitely things that can be going on as well. With lifestyle, the biggest culprit for most people, I think, is not enough sleep. And I actually posted a pretty epic blog post, last week, which you can put a link in the show notes, about the link between sleep and weight. And it really talked about, how inadequate sleep affects not just metabolism, but also hunger. And it affects, it actually causes the same changes in the brain that we see in obesity, binge eating, and food addiction. So not getting enough sleep actually causes food addiction. And so there's this very, very close link between, sleep and an ability to lose weight and maintain weight loss. So working on getting enough sleep and also working on sleep quality. I've been tracking my sleep with my Fitbit and it's been very enlightening in terms of understanding what my sleep quality has been, because I thought it was better than it actually is. And so it's allowed me to sort of renew my focus on increasing my sleep quality. Inactivity, so leading a very sedentary lifestyle, makes it really hard to lose weight. So does too much strenuous activity. So we're sort of overtraining. That can then make it really hard to lose weight because it's a big stressor on the body. So it again causes these hormonal shifts that make it really hard to lose weight. And just high stress in general. So you know, high chronic stress makes it incredibly difficult to control what you're eating. So when you're under a lot of stress, you're more uninhibited with your food choices. So you're more likely to, you know, oh, you know, I deserve this, whatever, you know, you're more likely to make those types of choices. You're also, it increases hunger, and it changes your metabolism. So it makes it harder to access stored energy. So it hits it from all sides. And of course the sort of health condition version of high chronic stress is adrenal fatigue. So when we get into health conditions, adrenal fatigue is a common culprit. You can test for that with a saliva cortisol test where you measure your cortisol right when you wake up, before eating lunch, before eating dinner, and then before you go to bed. And you can see how it's changing throughout the day. So high cortisol and low cortisol both have the effect of weight gain, unfortunately. Hormone imbalances, so specifically sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, can lead to weight gain or resistance to weight loss. And those you can test in the exact same test as the adrenal fatigue, and it's spitting into a tube, so it's really non-invasive. Insulin resistance, which I already talked about, sort of in relation to too many carbohydrates. So insulin resistance leading to, you know, diabetes. Causes weight gain. Hypothyroidism, which of course is what I have been enjoying lately, and even subclinical hypothyroidism. So if you're worried about that, if you look at a list of thyroid symptoms and you have more than a few, you really want to ask your doctor for a full thyroid panel, which we talked about, I think, last week and the week before on the podcast. So there should be plenty of information to go and listen back to for hypothyroidism. But one of the classic symptoms of hypothyroidism is weight gain / resistance to weight loss. And then remember that, you know, changes to metabolism and the, you know, hunger hormones can be the side effect of some medications. So, you know, especially if that's something that you're dealing with, then we're really coming back to self-love, because some of these things are things that you can control. Some of them are things that you can diagnose and treat. Some of these things are things that are a long work in progress, and you can figure out what they are, but then it requires continued commitment to continue to heal and to continue to address these factors. And so, you know, make sure that as you are troubleshooting resistance to weight loss, that you are still also practicing self-love.
Yeah. And I'll just add to that I think the biggest, like, if people are stumped and they're like, how do I practice self-love in the midst of all this stuff that I'm supposed to be looking into? I think it's like shifting the focus away from weight loss and asking the question, like, why do you want to lose weight? And the answers are usually, okay, to be healthier, to be, you know, more active, to feel better when I get dressed in the morning, you know, to be able to have the confidence to, you know, meet new people or whatever it is. And so I ask, like, I always encourage women to kind of take weight loss out of the equation and focus on those whys instead, so that you're like, okay, well, what am I going to do to be healthier, to be more active, to meet new people in the body that you have right now? And that kind of then takes that connection away from the weight, so that you're not constantly thinking like, oh, I failed, or, oh, I did a good job because my weight went down. Because sometimes we can't control that. As you said, like hormonal changes, adrenal fatigue, you don't get enough sleep. Like there's just, it's impossible to really like finally control all of those different things and mechanisms that drive our weight. And so I think really focusing on that why is the first step towards cultivating self-love in the context of, you know, wanting to get healthier. It's like, just focus on those whys. Like, why do you want to lose weight instead of the weight itself?
Yeah, I think that's genius. It's one of my favorite phrases. I can't take credit for it. I heard it somewhere, but is getting healthy to lose weight rather than losing weight to get healthy, and taking a step back from the weight loss goal and thinking about the health goals. And I think that that is really what I think all of us are doing in our own lives, which is, you know, our criteria for how we assess how we're doing are different than what the weight is on the scale. It's related to our energy levels and how we're sleeping and how we feel and how, you know, how does it feel to be active and how happy we are, how easily we laugh. I mean, those are things to me that are much more important metrics for my health than what the number on the scale is.
Yeah, totally.
So shall we do some questions?
Absolutely. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So Alex says, what's the biggest reason that I cannot reach the level of health and fitness that I once had? 2 years ago, before I discovered paleo and was eating whole grains and oatmeal, I was 115 pounds with much less fat on my thighs and tummy. Do I have what looks like a broken metabolism? I know that I'm eating more calories than I was, but it consists of good, real food and fats. Why is it that I feel that I lose a couple pounds one day and fit into my jeans fine, but the next day I have to absolutely squeeze myself into my clothes? All I want is to be healthy and strong, and I feel like all of these things, all of these changes I've made, all the junk food I refuse to put in my body, how much I go out of my way to eat clean has just made me fatter over time. This greatly affects my confidence levels, and it honestly sucks to see people who can eat bread and pasta and be incredibly fit at the same time. I know this sounds like all I care about are aesthetics, but I truly care about my health and know that something is not right.
Okay, so the other things that I want to point out about this individual that were part of the history that you didn't read, Sarah, are that I'm assuming it's a she, right? We're assuming,
yes,
Alex is
a she.
Okay. Yes, she's a she. I see it. that she's working shift nights, four nights a week. And she's also mentioning that she's doing intermittent fasting / bulletproof coffee for breakfast. And so with that, I want Summer to kind of jump in and answer this. But for me, my initial concern is definitely when I hear things like pants fitting one day and not fitting the next, and the kind of hormonal imbalances that can come from some of the other things, it sounds a lot more to me than there's something going on than just fat loss, which is what obviously the show is about.
Yeah, Alex, you're going to hate me. My answer to you is, like, you probably don't need to lose weight. Like, your body is probably just like, this is where I want to be because I work shift work and I'm not always going to be getting the sleep that I need. But, like, lay off the hacking. I mean, I went down that same road. Your story sounds so similar to mine. That's why I'm like, you know, really getting fired up about it, because I was in the same situation where I was, you know, I was like, I'm 100% paleo and I sleep and I, you know, I work out intelligently and I just can't seem to lose weight and my body's gaining weight and I just don't know what's happening. And I kept paleoing harder and trying intermittent fasting and bulletproof coffee, like exactly what you had said, when the reality was that wasn't making me healthy. Like, that was a quest for aesthetics. And if your goal is truly to be healthy and strong, then you need to really shift your focus towards nourishing your body to be healthy and strong and stop fighting against where it wants you to be. And I think that based on, you know, the fact that where your weight is, you're really just trying to push it down to places where maybe it doesn't really belong or want to go for you to be healthy and function properly. And so that's where, like, really shifting your focus to the mindset piece, to just accepting that your body is good where it's at, and that there's so much more to life than continuing to hack and figure out, like, what that one missing piece of information is. Although I do think you can probably lay off the fasting for sure, and, you know, make sure that you're getting adequate sleep and lay off the bulletproof and make sure you're eating enough, but that's going to get you healthier. I'm not going to say that's going to get you to lose even more weight, because the longer that you hang on to this desire to, like, lose weight, the more you're going to end up down that crazy rabbit hole of wanting to tweak and tweak and tweak and tweak until that's all you're thinking about and that's all you're doing and your life revolves around that. And maybe yours doesn't, and maybe I, like, am making an assumption here, but it just sounded so familiar to me that's really where I went with my own story. And then I ended up with adrenal fatigue and estrogen levels of a postmenopausal woman at the age of 30, which is not cool. And building back from that is not easy. But that's my solid advice, is just, the number one reason you're not losing weight is probably because you don't need to.
That was awesome.
Totally. Summer's our people.
So yes. Yes. It's one of the things that, you know, I try to correct this misconception about the paleo diet as being a weight loss diet, because it's not a weight loss diet. You could maybe call it a weight regulation diet, because what happens is people who have weight to lose do tend to lose weight on the paleo diet, but people who are underweight tend to gain weight. And I think that, you know, we have a society where the goal leanness that we are expected to have when we look at models and we look at movie stars is actually much too lean for most women to be healthy. And that actually a higher percent body fat is better for hormone regulation, especially sex hormones. Women are more fertile when they have a little bit more body fat. It is actually a better situation for our bodies. So, yeah, I agree with Summer.
Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow, I think, too. I mean, like, I think if I had heard this I had really disordered behaviors, which at the time I just thought were normal, because a lot of those things are normalized in the paleo community. Like, it's normal to intermittent fast. It's normal to do bulletproof coffee. It's normal to continually tweak, like, your macronutrient ratios. But really, like, if that's getting in the way of you being happy and living your life, and then that's not normal and that's not healthy. And, I desperately wanted that one answer, like, am I just missing kelp from my diet? Like, please, how can I get back to, you know, less than like 20% body fat? But the reality was just that, like, that's not where I'm meant to function health at a healthy weight. And I had to gain weight to get back to, like, healthy, normal hormonal function, and just to be a happier human being too, and not be hungry all the time.
So I'm going to go on a little bit of a ranty tangent here, and I will be the bad guy that says this, and people can judge me and people can tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about. But this bulletproof coffee diet, this morning fasting, is seriously a problem for me. Like, I am so over it, and I'm going to tell you why, and you're going to not like me, and that's fine. I love butter in my coffee. I love cream in my coffee. I love those things in my herbal coffee and my brewed chocolate. I am not against something creamy and delicious in your drink. What I am against is this idea that you can skip out on micronutrient-rich food that is essential for your body to be healthy and healing, and replace it with a fat that allows you to fast. Because if you are a professional male athlete and you target goal is leanness, then that could be something that you're into. And that's who they've tested that diet on. They have not positively tested or gotten positive results for women, especially on this diet. And I'm using that word as a weight loss word, not as a lifestyle mechanism, because We are not hormonally set up for this concept of intermittent fasting, and we sure as heck should not be skipping out on micronutrients on a regular basis in favor of potentially losing weight. And I am particularly on a soapbox about this because I happen to know from the health history that this person doesn't have a period, she's intermittent fasting, she's bulletproof coffeeing in the morning, and she's saying it's working for her. And I can tell you that is a sure sign that it is not working for you. Because as Sarah indicated earlier in the show and on many other shows that we've had, the sex hormones are the most important indicator for women, like one of the first things that you can tell about your health. And if you're not having regular cyclical hormonal regulation, then that is a sign that there is hormonal dysregulation and or micronutrient deficiencies in your body. And they are paired together quite often. So I can tell you from personal experience, as someone who spent a large majority of my time in the beginning of the paleo journey, intermittent fasting and having the exact same kind of results where I was losing weight, but I was micronutrient deficient and I was having all kinds of health problems that snowballed into hormonal problems, I feel concern for people who believe that this is a great choice for them. Because the only scenario in which someone believes that this is a positive choice for them is weight loss. And the other side of the coin that nobody's talking about is how many calories are in this freaking coffee in the morning.
Yeah, like between 200 and 500.
It's a much better choice to saute some vegetables. Sarah, can you just like rattle off how many micronutrients would be in some roasted Brussels sprouts and 2 eggs versus like a giant cup of coffee with butter and coconut oil in it? Because that's kind of like where my mind is with this.
I can. It would be a very, very long list for the Brussels sprouts and eggs, and it would pretty much be complete. Like, you'd get almost everything between those two foods. And then with the coffee, you get some fat-soluble vitamins.
I think there's also something to be said about the psychological satisfaction of eating food, like of seeing food on a plate and eating it. You know, you automatically feel more satisfied.
I'm going to be devil's advocate here. I feel awfully satisfied with a bulletproof coffee.
Dude, really? I don't know. Yeah. I need to eat food. Like, actually, because otherwise what I would find is that I would then overeat later. Like, I would end up eating more than my body probably
needed. I think that's exactly what's happening to a lot of people, right? They bulletproof coffee, and then it's like they're having a meal before they would normally have their next meal, and they're having it larger because they're telling themselves, oh, well, I didn't have breakfast. Actually, you did. You had a 500-calorie cup of coffee 2 hours ago or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. I know this is my thing, and people sometimes love it or hate it when I do this, but I genuinely get so concerned about people because I know a lot of people are doing this high-fat, ketogenic, bulletproof approach where they're eating kind of one meal a day, and they think that this is a great solution for them. And I know that you're working on something for that, Sarah, but in the meantime, like, I am just – every time I read it, it just makes me so angry.
Well, so to bring in a little bit of science about why that approach is a bad idea is that, especially in women, but in all people, is that it actually suppresses the hypothalamic pituitary thyroid axis. So it can actually end up lowering your metabolism. And that when you also suppress that axis, it increases hunger. So it affects your ability to lose weight through both of those sides of the coin. And then it also suppresses the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, which then affects sex hormones, which also affect metabolism and how easy it is to access stored fat. So it actually affects your ability to maintain weight loss in a variety of different ways. It's basically a huge stress on the body. And especially sort of ketogenic diet approaches, they are called nutritional starvation, and they were developed in order to get developed for refractory epilepsy, so epilepsy that was not responding to any other nutritional treatment, and they were developed as a way to get some of the starvation signals happening in the body without actually dying of starvation. But when it's done in clinical settings for epilepsy, not only are those patients also supplementing with a ton of vitamins because these diets are inherently nutritionally deficient, but also there's this huge range of side effects, including losing your periods and going infertile and things that, you know, women are not losing weight in order to be infertile. That's like not the goal. And so there's these huge range of side effects that are really undesirable. And so when you look at these diets, you know, the people who are really enthusiastic about these diets are looking at insulin regulation, leptin regulation, maybe they're looking at mTOR, but they're looking at a really, really specific set of pathways, and they're not looking at it from a whole systems approach. So the body has 12 different systems, and one or two might love a ketogenic diet, but there's 10 others that are not being positively affected by it. And so it's a really, you know, these pro-ketogenic diet views are very, very myopic. And that's not to take away from the therapeutic potential for neurodegenerative disorders or cancer, because that's been really clearly shown in the scientific literature. But as a weight loss strategy, there are far fewer things that could be worse.
Okay, I'm sorry I usurped that, but I just couldn't let it go.
No, it's good. We got there.
It needed to be said.
We needed a little. We haven't done such a major tangent in a while, so clearly, we're good. We're good. Let's do one more question.
All right.
I know we're kind of running late, but let's just do one more. So this one is from Catherine. I am 5'2" and 130 pounds, but I would like to be 115, and I usually eat around 1,200 to 1,500 calories a day, all paleo. I've been running for the past few months about 5 miles a day and have recently joined a boot camp. The boot camp class is 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. Do you guys have any recommendations of how many calories someone in my position should be aiming for and the makeup of those calories? That's what really confuses me. I have tried and failed a few times, so not inputting my foods into a database, and when I see the number, I go over 1,200 and I either stop eating, whether I am still hungry or not, or go through an emotional binge eating everything and anything. The past 3 years, my body has gone through the ringer, weighing anywhere between 85 pounds and 145 pounds. The 85 was unintentional, and when I went to put the weight back on, I had self-loathing and abused myself with food. I hope this isn't too long because I can't seem to find something I can believe in. Thank you for your suggestions. I keep on hearing that women need to be eating enough, but what exactly does that mean? 1,500 calories, 1,800 calories. In looking at these calories, should the major proportion be made up of fat, protein, or paleo carbs? I'm so lost here, so anything would be helpful. I'm currently going through the why even try stage. I recently bought the Autoimmune Protocol and was giddy when I saw the section on awful meats. Just that extra little parenthetical at the end.
What was her name again?
Catherine.
Okay. You want me to go or?
Yeah, you take it. You take it and run, Summer.
So, Catherine, we need to be eating a lot more than that. Like way more than that. You know, for that activity level, and I don't want to give you a number because based on your history, it sounds like those numbers can become things that you get very, very attached to. It sounds to me like you have more of that like disordered eating personality, like in the fact that you dropped down to 85 pounds or that you went through periods of like restriction followed by binging and emotional eating. And so I don't want to necessarily give you a number, although, you know, I will say it should be like a lot more than that, you know, almost, I don't like maybe even almost double that, like, and I think it's more just gradually start to eat a little bit more. And I would say that you know, I don't know your health status or anything else, but that might be too much activity for where you are right now based on the metabolic damage that you had before. And so I think that's something that you also have to consider is like looking at like, are you happy? You know, how's your libido? Like, how's your energy levels? Are you sleeping well at night? Like, look at all these things that are going to impact your adrenals and see, you know, what's like how you're really doing, because that activity level and that number of calories right now is really going to like, that's a huge, massive stressors on your body that we're talking about. And so gradually, you know, eating a little bit more, and especially I would say like definitely more carbohydrates, because I'm assuming you're probably not eating enough, because most women aren't that I see, especially ones eating paleo. And laying off the exercise a bit, and really just like, you know, getting real with yourself and asking yourself like, why am I doing this? You know, how am I actually feeling? And maybe I just need to take a time out from like paleo altogether, take a time out from like working out so crazy altogether, and just start to kind of heal myself emotionally to understand why I went down this rabbit hole in the first place and why I feel inclined to stick to this number of calories and this level of exercise, because it certainly doesn't seem like it's for health reasons.
So I want to dovetail on what you're saying, because I totally agree with it, and I want to congratulate Catherine on being 130 pounds.
Yes.
Like, Catherine, this is an important moment, and I want you to hear three educated, smart women tell you that you are a healthy weight and you do not need to be doing boot camp to lose weight. Because one of the things, Summer, that I heard you say was, think about what you're doing this for. And from the way that she's phrased the question, I can logically deduct that it's very clear. She says, I'm 130 pounds and I'd like to be 115, and I'm doing this boot camp.
Okay, and I missed that part.
Yeah, so that's okay. I know I got the question. Just like double backing on it. And so for me, I think that Summer and I and Sarah at this point with Lifting Heavy and CrossFit all agree that women moving their body, especially with heavy weights and depending on your health condition, you know, whether you're walking or yoga or, you know, whatever moves you, is a wonderful thing. But not if it's because you think that that's going to get you down to a particular number on a scale. And I feel like it's really important to kind of go back and listen to the beginning where I was talking about, I am happy with myself. I am enough. And I think that you should be really proud that you came from an unhealthy weight of 85 pounds that was unintentional, and you put weight back on, and that it sounds like you're no longer having feelings of self-loathing and those negative thoughts. And I think that that in and of itself is something really special and important that should just kind of be savored and focused on right now. And that when you are finally appreciating how important that is, then you can think to yourself like, okay, what's my next goal? But right now, from my perspective, the goal for you, Catherine, is to understand and appreciate how very, very important that is, and how 15 pounds that you think that you need to lose. I have no idea if you need to lose it. I'm not looking at you. I don't know what your muscle mass is. I don't presume to judge or think that I know what you should or shouldn't look like. But I do know that, you know, quite often, that the height and weight that you're saying would be within a normal range. And so there's certainly not a concern for, you know, obesity causing health problems. So if you focus on health, both mental and physical, that would be what I would suggest as the priority.
I'm nodding, and then I just realized
nobody can see you.
Nobody can actually see me nod my head away and be like, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I have much to add other than, you know, clearly Catherine is getting very obsessive and very, very focused on these numbers and this food. You know, generally someone with a really healthy metabolism has a basal metabolic rate of something like 1600 calories. So if you lie down in bed all day, you need 1600 calories to maintain your weight. As soon as you get out of bed and you do anything, and it sounds like she's very active and doing a lot of cardio, that increases your caloric requirements way high. And I'm with Summer in the fact that, and Stacy in the fact that I think she should be working on maintaining her weight and working on, you know, maybe putting on some muscle, you know, maybe, and working on a healthier relationship with food. If someone else was in a situation where they were very, very overweight, which Catherine is not, and was kind of in this position, you know, the first thing I would say is you need to eat more food. And where I would recommend being is somewhere at around 10% lower than your basal metabolic rate plus the calories you're burning. So only a 10% deficit in calories. So for somebody like Catherine, that probably puts her at 10% lower than what she's actually burning and needs is probably still 2,500 to 3,000 calories. Like, she is super active. And that's still, boom, on the low side, right? Like, that would, like, she should maybe be looking at 3,000 calories a day to maintain her weight. And so the reason for that 10% deficit is because it's modest enough to not trigger all of those hormone problems that happen with severe calorie deficits or severe carbohydrate deficits. And so that's a really important thing. Like, with such low calories and being so active, she is really damaging her hormones. And so I think it's really, really important for her to focus on a better emotional response to food, more intuitive eating, lots of sleep, lots of stress management, and really working on the brain chemistry piece of all this, because this is something that that is more important than what the number is on the scale, is getting to that place of mental health and a mentally healthy relationship with food.
And I think that, like, that amount of food is probably going to seem pretty overwhelming to Catherine, like, because that's like double, you know, what she's eating, more than double. And so, you know, my suggestion would be to, you know, just gradually start to get there, you know, like, get more comfortable with it. And there's a good chance that right now your body's not really good at telling you when you're actually hungry, because you've learned how to silence it. So the idea of kind of, like, you know, eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, like this idea of intuitive eating, I even think that that may be a little bit tricky at this phase, because you probably don't even really know what hunger feels like. So I, you know, like, really paying attention to eating more and purposefully eating more is going to be something that you have to do. And then really cultivating the acceptance for whatever weight your body wants you to be at. So if it's 130 pounds, then just, you know, really starting to dig deep to the underlying issues as to, like, why you feel like you need to be 115, because obviously it's like an aesthetic thing. And that's where it comes to that question of, like, why, like, what is that going to give you that you currently can't achieve in your life? And then normally that is tied back to, you know, self-love or just like body shame as a coping mechanism. You know, so really, like, understanding kind of like that mindset piece and like the psychological and mental piece that's going on there. So I just wanted to add to that.
I totally agree. The only other thing that I want to add is that if someone else is listening and wondering the same kind of things, like, they're an athlete, they're running, they're going to do a boot camp or CrossFit, and, you know, what should they be eating and how much? And there's not some of the other concerns that we've identified. The one recommendation that I would have is the Performance Paleo Cookbook by Stephanie Gaudreau, who was on the podcast earlier, is a good resource to look at for what kinds of foods and, you know, when, and even, you know, if you want a concept of what a meal looks like or portion control or something like that, she's laid out meal plans and that kind of stuff from an athletic perspective. So I believe we've all kind of articulated that we don't believe that specifically that's where Catherine is, but for the benefit of the group, if that's something that you're going through, that could be a good resource as well.
Yeah, and you may not identify with the word athlete, but you're working out like that, you're an athlete. Yeah. You need to feel yourself like one, because I never identified myself as one because I'd never been one, but really I was one based on the level of activity I had. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Summer, it has been wonderful having you on the Paleo View. Thank you so much for coming on and letting us rant about things that we love to rant about.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So where...
I was just saying, before you go, can you please tell us about Rock Your Body?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, you know, like if people like what I have to say, or people probably were like, I don't want to listen to her because she doesn't want me to lose weight. No. if you like what I have to say, like I do, I have a free ebook on my website as well at summerinnan.com, or if you just go to summerthenutritionist.com, it's called 10 Rules to Break to Love Your Body. And then you also get a link to my 10-step body confidence makeover as well, which is also really good for self-acceptance. But my Rock Your Body program is coming out soon, yay, near the end of February. And that is really for women who want to like ditch that diet mentality, you know, break up with like that paleo perfectionism mentality, eat food effortlessly and love their body. So it's for that woman who really struggles to like get her food and weight, like quote unquote, under control. So she rebounds between, you know, like strict paleo or other diets. It's not just for paleo people, but you know, she rebounds between being really, really perfectionist and strict and then sabotage, you know, all in this effort to sort of love her body for the first time in her life. And she wants to stop obsessing over every bite of food and every flaw so that she can actually live this life that she's been dreaming of having 10 pounds from now. So it's an online group-based program, but there's going to be a free video training series just to give people a taste of what it's all about. And that'll be coming out at the end of February. And you'll see that through my website as well as hopefully on the like social media and the internet as well.
And Summer, you also have a podcast. So if people want to hear you say a boot more often, why don't you point them?
Yeah, good call. I almost forgot about my podcast, Fearless Rebel Radio. So it is to empower women to live life by their own rules. And we talk a lot about body image. We talk a lot about, you know, dieting dogma and like emotional eating and confidence and becoming more self-actualized and really just living a life on your own terms. So I have a lot of really amazing guests. Stacey has been a guest on as well. And you can find that on iTunes. And Rebel is spelt R-E-B-E-L-L-E. And you'll also see that on my website too.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on. I think that you just sold yourself to like, you know, all of our 99.8% of our listeners with some of the incredible summary of the things that you're doing. I love the way that you describe your focus and the mindset that you try to encourage people, women especially, to have about loving themselves. So thank you again for coming on. And Sarah, any parting words? Oh, I want to remind people, if you have not recently put a review in iTunes, that we're big fans of you being big fans. And so if you love the podcast, we would love for you to review it for us.
Anything? Yes, please. I just want to reiterate, Summer, thanks for joining us. I really loved your voice in this conversation. So
thank you.
That was awesome.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was fun.
And thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I almost just had a catuation. That's what I'm going to call situations involving cats.
That's clever.
What happened?
So Matt gave the kitten a bath for the first time, and he was really traumatized. Like, he gave the cat a bath before I got home, like a half an hour before I got home. And when I got home, he was still shivering and mortified. And he, like, curled up on me and wouldn't move for 2 hours. And I told Matt, I was like, I don't know, man, I might have to cancel the podcast. Matt got really mad. It's a catuation.
Aww. Aww, I hope the kitty's okay.
It's all right. Cole took him to bed. So Cole told me he would snuggle him.
Aww.
Matt actually produces the show, so if at some point you say something you don't mean to say, or you want to start over, or your cat jumps on you and you scream, you just kind of pause and then start over again, and he'll cut that, or you can tell him, please don't include that, and I'll cut it.
You can tell what exciting lives we have by the examples of what might go wrong during a podcast recording.
A couple of years ago, we used to say, if a baby screams, and now we're like, if a cat jumps on you. We've just become crazy cat ladies in our old life.
Oh, I don't want a day with Skype problems. See, I'm whining already.
I was whiny about 2 hours ago, and Matt told me I wasn't allowed to be whiny until 9:30.